Rock and roll. I got Matt Four on the Capital Racers show. Welcome, my friend. How you doing, brother?
I am fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, dude, this is going to be fun, dude. I like the exact place in history where you're at. I think a lot of my listeners are going to be able to relate to this. And quick shout out to Pitch Decks, which is our new sponsor of the show. And also for Chantel Rome. Chantel introduced us, and I believe she booked you on the podcast. So shout out to you. You're doing a great job.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyways, she's a connector of people.
She is. She's fantastic. She does some other stuff with us with Legacy Acquisitions, our team, on the social media and marketing side. Anywho, for the audience that doesn't know Matt Four, tell us a little bit about yourself, man. How'd you get started in real estate?
Yeah, absolutely. So by way of introduction, I'm Matt Four out of Nashville, Tennessee. Booming market, fantastic place to be invested in real estate. And my backstory is I've spent over 15 years in sales and sales leadership at one of the largest technology companies in the world. And I remember how I got involved in real estate is being a salesperson, you get worked on commission. And I was supposed to receive a life-changing commission check. We were part of a $10 million net new acquisition customer. And I just started thinking, Ruben, how much money I was going to make. I saw the number, talked to everybody about how I was going to invest it. And I heard everything from crypto to bonds to stocks. And then finally, I had a mentor at the time that said, you should check out this real estate thing. It's cash flow, it's tax benefits, it's appreciation. And then I got the faithful call the week of Christmas from a company I used to work for. To be clear, I don't work for this company anymore. And the VP said that, hey, you're not going to get that commission check. You're going to get 2 cents on the dollar. And I remember asking, like, wait a second, how did you guys come up with this number? What happened here? And his response was, Matt, how much money did you make this year? And I told him, and he said, isn't that enough? And so it was at that point, I realized that if I wanted to go pursue the goals that I had in my life to get back to the causes that I wanted to and live abundantly, that I was going to have to take my financial future into my own hands. So I fortunately was so far down this path of real estate that I was ready to get going. 3 months later, I bought a townhome around the street and scaled my single family portfolio before jumping into the multifamily and debt space. So happy to take it from there, but that's kind of my history there.
Oh, that's so frustrating. I used to work for a large national bank and we were salaried employees, but would also get commissions on our loans. This is way back in 2006. I was in the Spanish department, so I had access to every product they had. And then like right at the moment where I was going to get like my fattest commission on multiple loans, they're just like, oh, we're changing the commission structure of this. And now I did the math and I basically was going from a $10,000 commission on top of my salary to like a $5,500. And I was like, I hate this, man. Like you guys are always asking me for more and paying me less. And it was just so frustrating. And this is exactly why I could never work behind a desk. Are you working on retirement? Or are you already retired?
So I'm financially free. I still enjoy what I do though. And I want to put it clearly that that was a former company I worked for. It's not the company I work for today. And I'm appreciative of the skills they've given me. I'm appreciative of the training, the networks that I've gotten and all those sorts of things. But you said it right there that you're always being asked to do more. And at any point, if you're working for a large organization, they can kind of dictate the terms on you. So fortunately, I found real estate. Fortunately, I'm financially free. And that's allowed me to make the intentional decision that this is what I want to do with my life right now. And I'll keep doing it until I'm done with it, but I'm building another path as well.
Okay, cool. You're transitioning to multifamily. So we'll talk about that. But you mentioned a specific phrase before we started here, which is the golden handcuffs. What were you referring to there?
Yeah, I think anytime that you become an accredited investor or you scale into your career, that larger organizations do things like make sure that you are incentivized to stay working for them versus doing anything else. So in the technology space, which I work in today, it's usually tied around stock grants, RSUs, and things like that. And you have a vesting period over time. So I'm not going to get into specifics, but some companies that I've heard, it's like, hey, you're going to get a blank amount of assigning bonus that are going to vest over the next 4 years. So you're going to get them 10%, 10%, 10%, and then a large chunk if you stay for the full 4 years. So I think most of us get tied into working in a W-2 career because we see the bigger payoff, but we fail to look through the forest, I guess.
All right. So there's a lot of different ways to enter the large scale multifamily syndication scene. Some people are crazy and try and do this by themselves or with inexperienced teams instead of partnering with experienced operators. Some people will go the passive investing, let me learn about this route and then kind of get mentored by whoever it is that they're passively investing with. Some people, I think of Travis Watts, he was just a passive investor, but he brought all of his friends into his deals. And I think Joe Fairless was just like, dude, you're bringing so much money to my deals. Why don't you come and work with us? One more thing that I want to say on this, because I talk and I mentioned it before the show with a friend of mine named Abel Pacheco, who's been on the show a couple of times. And he said when he got his entrance, he started as a passive investor and then learned a little bit of the capital raising. And he called it this virtual cycle of passive to active investing, where the passive investor at some point becomes the active investor. And for people on your route, sounds like you might be in a similar situation where you're learning to raise capital. You may even have the capability, like you mentioned before the show, to bring $500,000 here, $500,000 there, but you want to scale, nurture, and educate your audience and learn this capital raising thing. So tell me about your journey so far in terms of what you've learned. Did they lift the curtains so that you could peek into the organization and learn what's going on so that you could eventually do the same thing for your future investors?
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll take this in chunks. The way I got started in real estate was just single family. And I think most of us get involved in single family as well. It was a townhome around the street. It was a new build. Only one person lived in it for less than half a year. So I was like, oh, eyes and ears on the property. This will be super easy. And it was. And then I bought another one and bought another one and bought another one. And then soon I got my single family portfolio to 10. And I was like, all right, I got to find a different way because Fannie and Freddie won't loan me any more money. I could either kind of dedicate my time to developing future capital sources from banks, credit unions, things like that, or I could jump into multifamily. Way though, I was partnering up with some of my friends and like, hey, you gave me the capital, I'll give you a return back. I took on some hard money and some private loans and things like that. But it was at that point where I reached that 10 limit where I was like, okay, I need to go find a different path. So I got into multifamily from there, more as a passive investor. But now I've had the opportunity to GP on one deal, work with the mentors of capital raising and how to go build out that network and really play to my strengths. So I'm not going to be the person that is a lawyer. I can't sit down and read 300 pages. I'm dyslexic. I grew up dyslexic. I don't do well with written words. So I'm not going to be that. I'm probably not going to be the person that's out there going to find properties because that's a whole different skill set. But what I can do is reach into my network and my accredited investors that I know and go raise capital from them. So I'm kind of on that path right now where I'm a passive investor in a lot of different deals, an active investor in one, and now trying to figure out like, how do I go reach into my network and do some of the capital raising?
So I recently had Bronson Hill on the show and he was making, I think, $200,000 in medical technology sales or something like that, medical device sales. And I've come across some people, particularly young people that are just like, hey, all my friends from college and the people that I grew up with, my family, like they don't have money. I want to learn this capital raising thing. And then there's these other guys that just blow up and scale into capital raising based off of the network. People like him, I think of when they have and surround themselves with a bunch of people that earn $200,000 that are interested in doing something with their money. And they already have this network built. And I think for some of those, they put in all the hard work to get to the point where they can actually survive and scale in that kind of environment, but they have a little bit of an upper hand, I think. So what are your thoughts on, like, I know that you haven't raised a whole bunch of money, but you're going to, I think I can foresee in your future that you're going to do very well in this space. But for the person out there that doesn't have an established network of accredited investors that doesn't make multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars every year, what could you say about getting into this? Is if they can save enough to just do one passive deal as a $25,000 or $50,000 investment, can that really launch them into this? Or are those guys kind of screwed? What's your thought on this?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. One, if you want to get involved in real estate, regardless of any level, you need money, time, or a deal. And usually people bring two of those. And if you don't have the money or you're saving up to have enough money, then you probably have time you can devote to it. So go spend your time upgrading that network. Go to your local commerce meetings, your local business association meetings, and things like that. Be around people who understand money, understand business, and probably are to that accredited status. The second thing I would say is like, well, what are you going to say during those? Is teach what you know. we are in an environment today where access to information is so easy, but structuring it up and making it easy and palatable for somebody to understand is really, really difficult. So I think that whenever you go to capital raise or whenever you're talking to real estate and trying to attract investors, you need to be able to teach it in a way that somebody who doesn't understand IRR, waterfalls, bonus depreciation, and all that kind of stuff can understand it. So if you're going to those meetings, if you're networking with different people out there, practice your pitch. And pitches are around frameworks. Think of three reasons why you need to invest in real estate, three tax benefits to investing in real estate, three reasons that syndications make more sense than doing it active and single family. Come up with your frameworks, practice your pitches, and then what you'll find is that the more value you provide those people in understanding real estate, then the more likely they are going to be attracted to you when you have time, when you have a deal under contract to go raise capital.
Can you say anything about courage, tenacity, or breaking through limiting beliefs here?
Yeah, the two things I would say on that is, we talked about it right before the show, get going and then get good. It's probably one of the best pieces of advice I can ever hear in my life, because I think we all struggle with this fact of you're at the starting line, you want to be at the finish line, and you think everybody's going to judge every step in the middle. When the fact of the matter is, there are 7 billion people on this planet. If you say something stupid to one person, that's okay. Chalk it up as I got going, I tried, and I'm getting better at it. The second thing I would say is, this was said to me the other day in context, and I love this saying now, it's don't try to make it perfect, just make it better. And so that goes to when you're practicing your pitches, it doesn't have to be perfect. We talked about it before the show too. I'm in podcasting. And one of the things that I've learned over the past year and a half of having a podcast is my message. What is my voice? What is the way I look at the world? And I didn't get that by thinking about starting a podcast. I did it by doing over 100 interviews with people and figuring out where my voice was and my frameworks.
I love that. That's very good stuff. Actually, let's take a moment here and talk about your podcast. Tell me about it. What is it called?
So the show is called Ice Cream with Investors. And the goal really is to bring on people from all different areas of the real estate environment or the real estate sector to talk about their specific niche. We've had people talk about self-storage, talk about notes, talk about infinite banking, talk about single family, short-term rentals, multifamily, all that sort of stuff. And Ruben, it's been by far the best thing I have ever done. And the reason why is because, one, I've learned that real estate is a huge market. I used to think that it was a fix and flip down the street that you see on HGTV. And what I've learned is it's so much more than that. And that's probably an ignorant thing to say, but I was talking to a guy the other day about parking lots and investing in parking lots. So it's just super interesting there. And then the second thing is, it's just a great way to build out your network, because I get somebody for a dedicated hour to, one, show my value, but also, two, to learn what that person knows. So anytime I have an attorney on, I'm like, here's an hour of free consulting I'm going to get that's non-billable. And maybe you can attest from your show, because I know you've had a super successful show for the past couple of years, some of the things you've learned, but it's been a fantastic experience for me.
Yeah, I've had 10 attorneys on there. I'd like to get a few more. I think primarily what I've learned is that there's all kinds of different ways to raise capital. It's not just LP capital. It could be co-GP capital. It could be family office capital, institutional capital, pref equity. You can raise money from insurance companies. You can do JVs. You can raise from friends and family, which is what a lot of people tell you to do, which actually brings me back to this thing that we were talking about earlier, because I have never had anybody in my family or circle of influence that has ever invested in any multifamily. Maybe they bought their own home and that's about it. And kind of brings me back to Matt Faircloth is just like, hey, if you're afraid to talk to your mom or your parents about raising capital and going into do business with you, then you're not confident. And I've been thinking about this and I realized that my circle of influence from my older days, from high school, from our Hispanic background, is very conservative. Nobody wants to do risk. I go to a party, at a family party, nobody cares about real estate. I'm talking about my show and they're just like, it just goes over their head. They're not interested. And they're just like, hey, how do you want your meat cooked? Or they change the topic, right? So I want to attest that if you do something like create a platform, you can have access to a whole new circle. of influence. So for anybody that is just like, I could never raise capital because I don't know anybody that is interested in investing, I can tell you can create an entire new circle. So I did want to mention that before we move on.
Yeah, two things I want to say on that. One, I've had one person my entire past year and a half of having the show say they couldn't be on the show and said no to that. And I've had 100 people plus more that I've already got recorded, more that I've already got lined up. So people always want to come on your show if they're in this circle. And yes. Then two, I think we sometimes get taken down by people that aren't on the same level of us or aren't on the same journey that we're on. And I was having this conversation earlier today that you should never take somebody's advice or criticism from somebody that's not at a position of where you want to be in your life, because they just don't know. And there's a lot of people right now in 2022 who want to get involved in investing in real estate, but their grandmother's milkman got invested in real estate in 2007 and he lost everything. Well, you don't know the specifics around that. And if they don't want to do it because of that, that's okay. Just keep going to the next one.
That's great advice. Okay, cool. So tell me about the future of Matt for in regards to multifamily. You were talking a little bit about you want to get into the raising capital space. Why that, not underwriting or property management or overseeing or visionary? What specifically about raising capital is it that calls your attention?
So I think being involved in real estate has changed my life for the better. And it's really that it's taken away the subconscious monkey on my back that's always worried about finances. Now, to be clear, when I say I'm financially independent, I'm not flying first class Air Dubai to some Middle Eastern country and living in a penthouse. But what I found through these turbulent past 2 years, specifically in March of 2020, when I saw my portfolio take a 40% dip and people all around me either losing their jobs or having people affected by losing their jobs and things like that, is that I wasn't really worried about it. Now, granted, I don't want to lose my job, and I think that would be bad experience and all that, but I knew that I was going to have a roof over my head and food on the table. And when you have that basic need set and taken care of, then you can live a more intentional life. You can start saying yes to the things that you want to be a part of and start saying no to the things that are giving you time drains. So why I want to be involved in raising capital is because my life's mission, I believe, is to help people see and achieve their highest potential. And so I think if people satisfy the financial need in their life, because it costs money to live on this world, you can't avoid it. As long as you have that need satisfied, then you can truly be the highest intentional person that you were meant to be. And so I don't think you get that from a spreadsheet. I don't think you get that from being reading through PPMs and things like that, all the nitty gritties and telling people where they're missing periods. I think you get that by showing people how they can become financially free through investing in real estate.
Okay. So I know that you've studied a lot of different asset classes and financial wealth making tools and things for preservation of capital or building capital the right way. When it comes to your business model in the future, what kind of assets or what asset classes are you most interested in and why?
I like multifamily right now because it's, I think, the foundational asset in real estate. And what I mean by that is it's never going away. The need for multifamily is never going away. The need for all real estate, you could say, is never going away, but it's going to be shaped as things happen. So for instance, you're seeing that in the office space, you're seeing mobile home parks being rolled up and things like that. That will be very dictated by the current market conditions. And I think multifamily is not going to be severely affected by current market conditions because it satisfies a human need of being housing. So for right now, that's where my focus is. But again, I'm open to RV parks. I have spent some time in RVs here over the past couple of years out in Oregon and the West Coast and things like that. And I absolutely love them. And I would love to give that experience to somebody else's family too, so they can share in that. But right now it's geared towards multifamily.
And when you say multifamily, are you talking about 100 unit plus value add in the Southeast or Sunbelt? Or are you talking about assisted living kind of multifamily or student housing or A class, B class, C class? Tell me a little bit more about the model.
Yeah, I would love to get into all of those because I've had all those folks on the show. Right now, where my focus is B plus to A minus assets. That's where I want to play my right now. And I know there's a lot of thoughts out there that, hey, you don't want to go into A because when recessions happen, then people fall down into the B and C classes. I totally get that. But I think the value add play, It depends, I guess.
Well, I mean, if there's always going to be a class that's downgrading. So even the A class, there's like the ultra A class that are going to move into A class. So
here's why specifically B class to A class is because it's not as elastic. What we've seen is cap rates in the C and D markets get compressed over the past couple of years at a more elastic level than A-class properties. So for example, if that's a new term for some listeners out there, A-classes in normal times were trading at five, let's call it a five cap, and C-classes were trading at a 10 cap. Well, now in 2022, we see A-classes trading for a 4.5 cap and a C-class trading for a 5.5 cap. So the room that it has to expand back out to its mean is higher in the C class. So I feel like if you're trying to execute a value add strategy over the next 3 to 4 years, you might be caught in that reversion back to the mean and might get caught swimming with your trunks out undone, as Warren Buffett would say.
Okay. And then, so are the lending parameters scaring you at all? Because a lot of people are having a harder time raising capital. I know that for some of us that are like real estate nerds, you want to buy as much real estate as possible, because in 10 or 15 years, it's going to be worth way more than it is today, regardless of what's going on in the economy. But what's your take, lending specifically?
It depends. So I believe that interest rates will continue to rise. I don't think that interest rates will fall or stabilize until the back half of 2023. So if you are getting floating rate debt right now, well, specifically, let me talk about this. Yeah. Anything that has mezz or bridge debt right now as an LP investor, I stay away from. It's just too risky right now. I think we're still trying to catch a falling knife. And as we're recording this in late September of 2022, and I don't want to be the last person grabbing at that knife. So anything with bridge or mezz debt, I'm a little hesitant on. But if it's Fannie or Freddie locked in, not interest only, it's amortized debt, I'm usually geared towards more or more focused on that right now. So I don't know if that answers your question. That's just kind of how I'm viewing things.
That's cool. I'm just curious what people are thinking and what kind of thoughts are going through their mind. One of the reasons that we're a private equity firm and we raise capital for other multifamily syndicators, and right now we're staying away from raising for other people, I think for a couple of reasons. One, we don't make as much money for ourselves or our investors when we raise capital for other people. But number two, we've started to have a lot of momentum and success in the build to rent, which we consider a version of multifamily because it's like horizontal multifamily.
Agreed.
It's all in one place. You manage it the same way that multifamily is managed, and you have a little bit of control over your own destiny, and you're not competing with other people for the same properties the way you do in multifamily syndication, where there's like 40 people bidding on the same thing and it changes the price and the ability to make money for your investors. So we're liking this, but lending, it's benefiting us. I've talked about this a few times on the show in the sense that people are buying less houses right now. And I think it's because they're thinking if there's rising rates and the ability to purchase, your purchase power, better said, is going down, then why would I buy a house today if I can buy one in 6 months for $50,000 less? So, But where are you going to live in the meantime? If you're tired of living in apartments or that's the lifestyle that you don't want, you're going to go rent a house. And guess what? We have houses for rent. So it's really increasing the demand for the product that we have. Although a lot of people get confused about this particular thing. They're like, hey, lumber is going down, but overall people are struggling to sell houses that are building houses. And I'm like, well, we're not selling these houses to individual retail buyers. We're selling them to institutions that look at the entire net operating income of the community. And once again, if the demand for rent and to live in our houses is going up, well, then that's helping us. Whereas I can definitely see how it's causing more problems in other specific niches of multifamily and house building. So those are my thoughts on it. Do you have something to comment on that?
Yeah, if you can build to rent, I think it's a beautiful model right now, because if I have 2.5 kids, a dog, and they are between the ages of 8 and 13, I'm not your multifamily and liver anymore, unless I'm in New York City, Chicago, LA, et cetera. So I love your model. I would also say on the current lending environment, the Fed is having a runoff on their balance sheets on MBSs, mortgage-backed securities. So while hiking rates is one thing, the runoff multifamily mortgage-backed securities is a whole different thing. And Japan just this week dropped a bunch of treasuries as well, which means that somebody has to go in and buy those treasuries. So the competition for capital right now is high and liquidity is starting to dry out of the system. So I still believe that multifamily build to rent is all a good market to be in because housing will continue to be an issue.
For
affordable
sure.
housing, at least.
Those are the types of things that you want to be saying to people in order to educate and nurture them so that you can raise capital. But in this particular moment in history, as you're seeing yourself as a scaling and person of increase in capital raising, tell me, what have you learned so far? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people that are in similar situations that want to raise capital and they want to hear from somebody that's in the same position as them. What are you doing to learn capital? What have you learned along the way also?
If you're listening to the show, chances are you really enjoy multifamily, you really enjoy real estate, or you really enjoy finances. What I can tell you is the person that you're trying to get as your investor probably doesn't care about any of those three. What they care about is like, give it to me simple. Is it pretty inside? Who's going to live here? And how much money am I going to make? I think so many times that I find myself in conversations, I start nerding out on like the Fed runoff and the Japanese drop in treasuries and what that's going to do to interest rates and all this kind of stuff. No one cares about that. So what I would say is start with the basics, start with 101 and allow people to be curious and lead you down to the rabbit hole. Don't already assume that they care about IRRs and cash on cash and waterfalls and splits and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of engineers that like multifamily that want a lot of answers, but I would say that the majority of people, if not a huge chunk of people, if you're not into like analytics and hypothetical graphs and all kinds of logical based information and what the return and what the team and what the market, and you just want to know is like, hey, what's the story? Who's going to live here? Just like some of the things that you said. Make sure not to prevent yourself from talking to people because you don't have all of the answers.
And I think most people, and this is probably a general statement, not meant for everybody, but most people want the answer. Could I see myself living here if I wasn't in my current situation? And if the answer is yes, or you can get them to a yes, then chances are they would probably invest in that deal.
Yeah. Get going and then get good. That's phenomenal stuff right there. Okay, cool, man. Let's jump into the lightning round. Let's start with this one. What is the best vacation you've ever taken?
I've traveled to 40 different countries, 6 different continents. Probably my best vacation is I'm an Ironman athlete, which is a long distance triathlon. And I did the world championship race at the 70.3 distance in Zell am See, Austria. And the reason why it was a cool trip is because my mom took me traveling all throughout the world when I was a kid. And I finally got to take her and pay for her and the rest of my family to go on that vacation. And it was just kind of one of those things that, one, qualifying for that race, two, being there with my family, and three, knowing that I was able to put it all together and make it all happen. It was just a cool experience that I'll never forget.
Props, man. That's amazing. All right. Favorite book of any kind?
I always give the answer the last lecture, and I'll summarize it real quick for you. The last lecture is something they do in academia, like you're about to retire, you're giving your last lecture, here are all the things I've learned over the past 30 years. Remember that time Ruben did something stupid? Ha, 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 ha. It's kind of like one of those speeches. And this guy wrote this book about the last lecture that he's given his last lecture. And the net of the book is like all these lessons he's learned throughout his life, like brick walls are put in front of you to see how bad you want something, for example. But what he tells you at the beginning is the reason why he's writing it is because at the age of 35, he has pancreatic cancer. And so it's all of his lessons around like, these are the things I wanted to do. Some of them I failed at, but I learned this lesson, and some of them I succeeded at, and it was an awesome experience. But the last lecture is really meant for his kids. He's never going to see them grow up. So he's giving his last lecture of the things he wants them to learn. If you're not a reader, go watch the YouTube video, The Last Lecture by Randy Pausch on YouTube. It's phenomenal.
That sounds pretty intense, man. Tell me the craziest thing you've seen during your travels.
I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa one time, and it's a super, super humbling experience because in the States, we're the richest country in the world. There, they don't have streetlights, they don't have paved roads and all this sorts of stuff. And the guys that would climb up there and porter your things and guide tourists up the mountain are literally wearing cardboard on their feet. And to think that they're going up 20,000 feet in the air wearing cardboard, that's what they do for a living. It's just a humbling experience, and it was crazy to see.
Shout out to Vikram Raya, who just went up that mountain. I saw a post of him at the top. So that's pretty cool. Can you tell me about a moment that changed the trajectory of your life?
In March of 2018, I had a sister who grew up mentally disabled, and she died in my parents' house. It was an awful moment for our family in general, specifically my parents having to see that. But it just changed the trajectory of, you hear me talk a lot about intentionality, being intentional in your life. And I think so many people hear the statement that life's too short and all these sorts of things, but you don't realize it until someone's life that you really care about is taken unexpectedly. She went to bed one night and didn't wake up. So I would say that moment has really changed who I am. And I try to carry the lessons that she taught me on forward to everybody I meet.
Yeah, I've been looking for an opportunity to mention my brother, Michael Greth, who recently died. He was mentally disabled and then became septic, and he couldn't talk to anybody to tell him that he was in pain. Before he knew it, he was in the hospital and he died on Thanksgiving Day last year. So shout out to you, my brother. Love you, man. Best way to raise capital from your perspective.
Start a platform. We were talking a little bit about it. The podcast is the best thing I've ever done. I have so many people in my network now that I didn't know were interested in real estate. And I didn't even know if they remembered who I was, quite frankly, that are like, hey, what's this thing you're doing with real estate? Can you tell me a little bit about it? Oh, by the way, the next time you have a deal, I would love to throw in some money on it. So start a platform, get out there. The people that make fun of it or are rolling their eyes at you, you don't need those people anyway. Yeah. There are more people out there that you can create your own network.
All right, so I love to talk about limiting beliefs. Do you have any hacks for breaking through limiting beliefs?
I would say consistency on what your limiting belief is. So let me try to frame it up and say that Iron Man has taught me a lot about limiting beliefs and humbling. Like I always like to say in Iron Man, it doesn't become easier, you just get faster at it. So it's a 140.6 mile race, swim, bike, run. And the reason I was able to accomplish that and continue to accomplish that and focused on that is because I just do the little thing every day. And that's just work out. Some days I'm having a bad day and it's a 5 minute run or a yoga. And some days I'm having a good day and it's a longer workout. But the limiting belief of can I do this or not was broken by the consistency of doing that thing every day until race day came and I just shattered those limiting beliefs.
That's good stuff. All right, how about this? Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
Absolutely. I think over the past 36 years, I've been on a spiritual journey, but definitely over the past since my sister died on releasing control and letting somebody else take the wheel and knowing that they will have your best intentions in heart. What's meant to be will end up happening.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about it, but what do you love best about being an Ironman?
I think that no one is born to do this race. So it's a 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike, 26.2 mile run. Yes, it's all in a single day. I'm just a glutton for punishment. I like to say that like LeBron James was born 6'8 and 225 pounds of solid muscle. The dude and could jump out of the gym. The dude was gonna be an athlete. And I'm not saying he didn't work hard. He became the best of all time because he worked so hard. But he couldn't do an Ironman. So the people that show up on race day with the courage enough to start at that finishing line and go through it have already done their journey. And their journey of waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go ride your bike for 100 miles, to drive there an hour, to drive back an hour, to stretch, to eat, and then wake up and do it all over again, they've already been on their journey. So I just love the fact that anyone who steps up to that starting line has the grit and the tenacity of putting in for those consistent efforts every day.
Wow. That's great, man. I never thought about it that way. Favorite aspect of being the host of the Ice Cream with Investors podcast?
Networking. We already kind of talked about it, like having 100 people on the show with lots of people scheduled towards the end of this year. It's been a fantastic way to meet some of the people that I've always admired from afar and learn from people who have different skill sets than me. So by far, one of the best things I've ever done.
All right, two more questions. Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
Yes, but I can't tell you the moment. And I'm gonna say it's a miracle just because you ever catch yourself when you're in a beautiful moment and it's just everything works perfect at that moment where you're like, there's no reason this should happen, but it's just a miracle. And I'll tell you, I mentioned going through an RV. My girlfriend and I took a Sprinter van through Oregon for 7 days and over earlier this year. And if you ever really want to get to know someone, spend 7 days in 140 square feet with them.
Yeah.
But I remember we were on the beach in Oregon, looking out on all these big rocks. We were the only people around within 5 miles. And literally it was so peaceful watching the sunset with her in that special moment. that I almost cried because I was just like, this is incredible. So it's those moments that I find miracle. They're not life-threatening, I guess, or near-death experience, but they're definitely miracles.
All right, last question for the lightning round brought to you by Shanna Amigo. She would like to know, what impact would you like to leave in the world?
I would just say helping people see and achieve their highest potential. Like, I believe that we all have a calling within ourselves in this life, and we get distracted because we get told we should go one way or the other. And I want people to see in themselves their highest potential. And if any way I could help them do that, that is my life goal.
Sweet. Great answers on the lightning round. Shout out to the Capital Racer Nation. Thanks for tuning in. Please leave us a 5-star written review. Also, leave a review for Matt at Ice Cream with Investors. Shout out to Legacy Acquisitions, to our sponsors, Good Egg Investments, Syndication Pro, Apartment Educators, the Family Office Club, and PitchDecks.com. Get $1,000 off some of those programs at CapitalRaiserShow.com. So, Matt, what can the audience do to get a hold of you or find your podcast or find you if they're interested in hooking up?
Absolutely. So the show is called Ice Cream with Investors. We are on all major platforms, Stitcher, iTunes, Google, all that kind of stuff. You can go to icecreamwithinvestors.com. It's a work in progress. We got going and now we're getting good. Probably the best way to reach out to me though is either on LinkedIn. You'll see Matt Four from Nashville and my ugly face smiling up there. Or you can straight up email me, Matt4, 1, @gmail.com.
Very cool. And then I'm also curious if you have any last parting words of wisdom for the aspiring multifamily syndicator and or capital raiser as they're scaling on their journey.
We're going to leave it with the same saying, get going, then get good. No one's perfect when they first start something. The beauty is in the journey, not in the end result.
I love it. Yeah, that's probably going to be the title of the show, man. Very cool having you on here and getting to know you, man. Thanks for coming on and dropping some wisdom for the audience, man. With that, I'll wish you a great day. Enjoy your triathlon whenever that is next.